she walked over to the bride's limo, tried to hand her a cross necklace to wear. The bride politely thanked her, but explained she was wearing her late grandmother's necklace, who passed just a few months before. That must have been the last straw. She reached into the window of the limo and tried to pull the bride out, screaming and cussing that she didn't deserve her son.
Oh.
Thanks.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Here Comes the Drama. I'm your host, Krista Innes. Today, I'm joined by the incredible Paige Connell, the voice behind She Is a Page Turner. She's a content creator and a working mom known for pulling back the curtain on the mental load, the realities of marriage and motherhood, and how society often views women. In this episode, we're talking about the invisible weight moms carry, reacting to some hot takes, of course, and reading a wild wedding story that involves somehow two different weddings, but one very common denominator. I'll let you guys guess as you listen. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, Paige. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you. I was just saying before we started recording that I think I first saw you on, I want to say it was probably TikTok or something, and you stitched Dave Ramsey. And I love like this feminist movement where we're just calling out people that maybe say things that are a little harmful to, especially where we talk about moms and the mother load. And I always tend to like just jump right in. But can we talk a little bit about what that was? I kind of want to talk about your platform and how that's kind of like grown over the years and what you kind of focus on.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So that video in particular was right up my alley because I talk a lot about childcare and he was talking about the cost of childcare. And so for context, I create content and I started out talking about just being a working mother. And part of that conversation is logistics. How do I make it work? How much do I pay for daycare? What does our schedule look like? Just all of those things. And I was just sharing my lived experience of motherhood. And the very first time it went viral on TikTok was talking about how much I pay for daycare because people were just astonished at how expensive it is and didn't even believe me, transparently. A lot of people were like, that's not real. And so I spend a lot of time bringing awareness to the childcare crisis because this is something that is happening to most people in our country. Like most people and parents are experiencing the high cost of childcare and the impacts of that. And so when I saw the video of Dave Ramsey saying $25,000 a year for childcare, like that's not real, I felt like I had to respond because it is very real. It is the lived experience of many, many families. And for me, he's a financial expert. He should understand the finances of the people he's speaking to and the fact that this is the reality for most people in our country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think when you get to a certain, I don't know, I would say platform of his, he can't really relate to the common person, the common family. And so I feel like your content is so necessary because so many moms might go in and see something like his and it's like, oh, wait, I shouldn't be paying this or like this isn't normal, but like we can't relate to someone like that that actually is not in it, right?
Totally. Yeah, I think first and foremost, I think he's of a different generation. And so childcare looks different today than it did even 10 years ago. And so if you haven't been a parent to young children in a very long time, you don't know the realities of the cost, right? So I think in that way, he's out of touch, but it is his job to be in touch with what the average experience is of parents in our country, especially if he's giving out financial advice. But I also think just in general, Dave has a very specific idea of what it should look like, right? He had a stay-at-home partner. He personally likes that, right? Like that idea of women providing that childcare, or at least he insinuates that in some of his content. And yeah, you know, I just think he has a very specific platform and form of advice that he gives. And I just felt like in that instance, you know, I'm not a financial expert. I don't pretend to be. But in that instance, he was saying something that I felt like was so outlandish and out of touch that it had to be addressed in some way.
Mm-hmm. So I know I kind of like jumped the gun right into that conversation that I saw, but Sure. Can you tell everyone a little bit more about what you post about on your page, your content, and what you feel your mission has become with your posting?
Sure. So yeah, I talk a lot about being a working mother and the realities of what modern marriage and motherhood look like, specifically for women. I will say my following on all platforms is 99% women, sometimes 98, you know, it fluctuates, but it's mostly women because my content for them is relatable and it's something that they understand and see themselves in. I would say the thing that most people know me for is speaking about the mental load, specifically as it relates to motherhood, but I speak about it in general as well. And my goal with that conversation is to help women articulate what's happening in their lives so they can better process that with their partner, find equity at home and hopefully in the workplace as well. And as part of that mission, I also talk about systemic things like lack of paid parental leave, lack of affordable childcare, the motherhood penalty in the workplace. So my overarching goal is to help women advocate for gender equity in all facets of life. So not being the default parent by default, right? All of these things that I think as a society have been very normal for very long, but are leading women to feel burnt out and exhausted. And I do that through sharing my own experience, but also just thought leadership on these topics in general.
Yeah, I love that. It's so powerful. And it's funny, I mention it time and time again, but like before doing all of this, I worked for a mommy brand. And ironically, it was I had my daughter. But with that, it was, I heard firsthand stories from moms like struggling to go back to work, having to go back to work after 6 weeks or unpaid leave. And when I started kind of like digging into it, I was like, this is outrageous. Like
it is.
We're in a country where they want us to have more kids, but then there's no support when you do have those kids. So what do you think are the biggest things like work? I mean, workplaces is one thing. What can workplaces do? What can we do as a society to kind of like raise awareness to all this stuff?
Yeah, I think talking about it first and foremost is really important, bringing these topics up. You know, the things I've mentioned, childcare, paid parental leave, we often view these as women's issues when in reality, they're a family issue. They should be impacting anyone who is a parent, not just women, but women are the ones that disproportionately take on this work, right? So if there's no childcare, who stays home? Typically mom. Who adjusts their career? Typically mom, right? And so that's just a societal expectation. And then sometimes people will point to the fact that, well, oh, the husband makes more money. And that just points to the wage gap, right? It's just like, it's this kind of like chicken and egg thing, right? We're struggling at home, we're struggling in the workplace, and they're really tied together. And so I think on an individual level, I like to tell people this is not a failure. Like if you've ended up in a position where you're burnt out and exhausted and you're struggling with the mental load and your career has taken a hit due to childcare or whatever it might be, you're not alone in that. That's not a personal failure. That's a systemic failure across the board. But also, there's certain things that are within our control that we can do. And so we can't fix all the systems at one time, but we can do some things, which is, for example, if your husband has access to paid parental leave, he should be taking it. Mm-hmm. So many men don't. So many men have access and they don't take it. And they don't take it because they're afraid it's going to hurt their career, which ultimately just hurts women's careers more and hurts their partners and their baby and all of the things. And so we need men to be doing that. We need policies that support parents in the workplace. So adequate sick time, adequate paid leave, flexible work schedules. We need to stop these return to office mandates that disproportionately impact women, right? Like there's all these things, but also within our homes, one of the reasons I suggest paid parental leave, not suggest, I strongly encourage, is because when men take it, they're more likely to carry that mental load with their partner from the beginning. And the mental load disparity happens very, very early on, typically even before you have kids. I think about when my husband and I were in our 20s, we were going to a million weddings. I always bought the gift and the card and booked the hotel and coordinated all the things. And he was there, but yeah, I was coordinating it, right? Like I carried that mental load and it wasn't super heavy until we had kids. And so being aware of these dynamics in advance and talking about them with your partner, putting systems in place to avoid one person carrying too much, that's something we can do. And there's tools to do that.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I feel like it's such an important conversation that a lot of families either don't have or don't know they should or can have them because it's just, that's the way it was when I grew up. Or my dad went to work, my mom was home. So I just thought that's how it went. And I think, like I said, with working at the mom brand, I was able to see like, I don't want that when I go through postpartum. I need my partner. It was like, have your partner support you, get your partner involved in the process. Because so many women would like tell me like, oh, my husband wasn't even in the room when I gave birth, or he went right back to work the next day. And even if they had a choice to stay home, they're like, oh, well, I got to work. And it's just like, you don't realize if you're setting your family up for failure, if you don't take that time as a partner to the one that gave birth, right? And so I feel like it's such an interesting conversation because that push and pull between work and sticking up for your family, essentially.
Yeah. And I think it's the narrative, right? We put a real premium in our country on men being providers and doing the paid work and women doing the unpaid care work at home. And so even like the overnight feedings, I've said on social media, like dads should be doing some of those. Even if their partner's breastfeeding, like they can change the diaper, they can soothe the baby. And men are like, well, I have work tomorrow. It's like, she's going to be up tomorrow too. Okay. Like, and doing something incredibly important, which is caring for your newborn. And we have this narrative of this work that men do outside of the home being really important, if not more important than the work their partner does at home. And so I really think we should push back on that. And I do think most men want to be good dads. They want to be good partners. But to your point, like as a society and kind of what's been modeled for us just doesn't show us what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to someone the other day and they were asking like, oh, how was your postpartum? And I realized I'm like, yeah, obviously I had a lot of challenges and stuff. But I think because my husband at the time, like where he was working at the time, he got like 2 weeks off. I was like, this is what it's going to be like when I'm postpartum. I'm going to need you to help with this. And like, I remember just being responsible for like breastfeeding. I was like, other than that, he did everything else, or we were able to split other things. And I would hear of all these moms like having postpartum depression. And obviously that's so nuanced. There's so many reasons why women go through that, right?
Totally.
But I feel like a lot of it could be helped with a supportive partner or supportive workplaces. Because a lot of times these women are stressed about going back to work in a few weeks and they're not getting paid and they have to get their child in daycare. And that's a lot.
There's a lot. And you even mentioned daycare. Women are typically the ones finding childcare, and that's really hard to do. And so, yeah, it's not as simple as just being home, taking care of a sleeping baby. It's pretty complex what's going on. I'm glad to hear that you had the support that you need. I mean, similar to you, my husband had not a lot of time with our first three kids. He had no time. And then with our fourth, he had 4 weeks, and it was night and day experience for us, right? It was a vastly different experience for me. And I think that's so important. I wish everyone had that.
I know. It's like, imagine how it would be if men were like forced, like you have to be home during these 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever that looks like, and just support women.
Yeah. I mean, some countries do that. They mandate it that men have to take it. And there's like specific rules around how that looks. And so, yeah, I think unfortunately, in order to get men to do it, oftentimes it has to be mandated. But I do think more and more men are doing it, but we still need to see that improve across the board. And there's data to show that the work that women are doing and the mental load they're carrying, it leads to real impact, mental, emotional, physical tolls on women. And that has a long-term impact on their lives and their well-being. And so if we care about that, if we care about mothers as much as we say we do, then we should prioritize their care.
Yeah. So I bet with like posting this kind of content, I mean, I see it because I follow a lot of content about like talking about inequality with women or women empowerment. There's always the haters in the comments. What do you think the most, not necessarily like hate comment or like argument against what you have to say, or, you know, negative comments that people will comment, and how do you kind of handle that?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people say a couple things, that I hate men, which I don't. I don't hate men. I just want men to show up in a more meaningful way. And I think most of them want to do that, which I know not everybody believes that. Like, I actually am a person on the internet who says, like, I actually think most dads want to be good people and good parents. They're not doing it necessarily, but I think they want to. And so it's worth trying to get them there. But most people say, I hate men, or that my husband must hate me. Those are two top comments, because I've talked about my own experience in marriage and motherhood with my partner and what that journey's been like. And so this mostly comes from men, obviously. It's not coming from women. I would say the vast majority of women feel understood, or at least relate to something that I'm saying, even if not everything. But those tend to be the top comments, which is because I'm pushing for gender equity that, yeah, I don't like men, and the men in my life don't like me.
Mm. And I feel like, too, it's like people that say that kind of thing in their family, it's like, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Yeah.
It works for them, but does it actually work for them? Maybe it works for them as the male partner, but have they actually sat down with their partner and asked, does this work for you? But I think it's something you're probably afraid to ask that question because they don't want to get the pushback or have to carry more of that mental load.
Yeah, I think it's layered. I think it depends on the person, obviously. And one, I hear from women in their 60s, 70s all the time who are like, I wish I'd had this when I was younger, because I just suffered through it. And I spent 40 years of my life catering to somebody who never helped me at all. And I hear that constantly. And then I'm lucky enough to hear from young women who are learning about what they do and don't want in a relationship. But I think for men, some of it's, you know, what did I see growing up? What did my dad do? What did my mom do? I think to your point of happiness, one of the comments that I see often, which is always so surprising to me, and I think comes from a very specific subset of men, is that men will sacrifice their happiness for their family and women will sacrifice their family for their happiness. So insinuating that women who expect more from their partner or choose divorce because they're unhappy are choosing their own happiness above their families, and men are willing to suffer for their families. And it's this very specific talking point that I find so interesting, but I think it's, again, trying to position women in this bad light, the same way we do with single moms, right? Single moms are bad. Where are the dads, right? Like, the moms are there. We talk about that.
Yes.
Like, the impact that being raised by a single mother has. And we never say, like, okay, the impact of a father being absent has, right? Like, we never talk about that. So I think it's a branding thing, but essentially, like, whenever women do something that remotely prioritizes themselves, we position it as selfish. When women have a career, they're selfish, right? They're looking to make a ton of money. They're letting somebody else raise their kid. When men do it, they're providers, they're family men, right? They're putting food on the table. We have very different narratives for men and women in our society, so much so that we would never call a mom a hands-on mom or a present mom. But like so many women will be like, I have the best husband. He's such a present dad. He's so hands-on. It's like, yeah, you kind of have to be hands-on with a toddler. Like there's no other version of parenthood, right, for women. And so it's just so interesting. I think some of it is just, yeah, the status quo, what we're used to. And then other parts of it are kind of like, yeah, what we think about men and women and their time and whose time we truly value.
That's such a good point. Yeah. It's like, I've seen videos about where it's like a mom could be juggling like a few kids at the store. They're like, that's a mom. The kid might be like throwing a tantrum or something. And they're just like, okay, whatever. She's doing her mom thing. But if a dad does it, oh, he's such a good dad.
The best dad.
He's such a good dad. And I remember like people will say stuff about my husband. They'll be like, oh, he changes the diapers. Oh, he takes her places by himself. I'm like, well, he's her father. Like, why wouldn't he? But I feel like it's also generational. At least my parents' generation, I feel like a lot of times it was stay-at-home mom. So she was with the kids a lot. The dad was at work and, you know, you saw them for dinner time. The older generations are like, what's happening here? Like something's shifting.
Yeah, totally. I think things are shifting. I think in the millennial generation, you're seeing more egalitarian relationships, which is amazing. You're seeing a little bit more polarization in the younger generations between men and women and what they expect from one another. And I think there's many reasons for that, but it is interesting how different millennial men are compared to their fathers. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing, but it doesn't come without pushback, obviously, when you're talking about these deeply ingrained expectations of men and women. When you push back on those people, it gets uncomfortable.
Yeah, definitely. It's for the better good of everyone, for sure.
I agree.
What's your message for anyone listening that maybe is struggling with the mental load right now and doesn't kind of know the first steps to take either with their partner or their family or their work?
So with the mental load in particular, I often say the first thing you have to do is just start to understand what it is. I think oftentimes women feel incredibly burnt out and exhausted, and they feel like they're kind of on this hamster wheel they can never get off of. They have this ongoing running to-do list that's always there and never shorter. But they can't articulate that, right? Like when their partner says, what's wrong? They're just like, I don't even know. There's a million things. I could tell you a million things that I'm stressed out about right now, right? And so first and foremost, I suggest people familiarize themselves with the terms and what's actually playing into the mental load. And so one way to do that is to, we say, make the invisible visible, write things down. Every thought that pops into your brain, which is like, I have to pay the school for a raffle basket. My kids need cash because they're going to the beach tomorrow with camp. I have all these reminders on my phone. And I think a really important way to do this is just write everything down for a week, 2 weeks, just write it all down and look at it. And you'll see, you'll start to see what that mental load looks like. What are the things that are weighing you down? What's stressing you out the most? What's causing the most tension? Where do you think your partner can support you? Where do you feel like you're strong? Being able to look at it in a really concrete way. I use a spreadsheet and I offer this to people, whoever wants it. It's part of my free guide. But I have a spreadsheet and it just lists a bunch of tasks that most families do. It's from the book Fair Play. Eve Rotsky created this game, which is a really great way to make that invisible labor visible. Doing that is so helpful just for you as a person to be able to see it and say like, wow, okay, this is why I'm tired. Like, this is why I'm stressed out. And then from there, you can think about having a conversation with your partner. But I often tell women, like, sometimes you're not ready for a conversation with your partner and you just need to be able to say it to your therapist or say it to your best friend and start to articulate what you're feeling. And then once you've been able to do that, then you can start to have the hard conversations of, okay, well, what does it look like for us to change this?
Mm-hmm. I love that, saying it out loud, because I feel like a lot of times, like as women, we like keep things in until like,
yeah,
kind of builds up a little bit. And then it's like, you can't take it anymore. So I love that, getting it outside, saying it to a therapist, a friend, and kind of piggybacking off of that.
Hey, drama lovers, big news. My book, Here Comes the Drama, A Ferris and Sloan Story, is officially out now. If you've been following their wild wedding saga online, this is the full story, packed with messy twists, sharp banter, family chaos, and all the heart you've come to love. And judging by your messages and posts, you're loving it too. Huge thanks to everyone who's already grabbed a copy early and shared it on social media. Your support means everything. If you haven't read it yet, now is the time. Head to KristaEnnis.com/book or click the link in the show notes. It's available in both print and ebook. Grab your copy before the spoilers start showing up in the comment sections, because trust me, you'll want to experience every jaw-dropping moment for yourself.
Okay, let's get into, because I know everyone loves the crazy stories, wedding hot takes. Let's get into some different hot takes for weddings. If as we're kind of talking, you have like any wild wedding stories or want to share anything, you know, no pressure to share anything personal if you don't want to. Okay, these are hot takes that people sent to me. Here's what they said. It's okay to skip traditions that don't resonate with you, including the white dress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? My daughter's daycare teacher just got married and she wore a pink dress. My daughters are all about it. They're like, that was beautiful. It was like a baby, like very light, light pink, but they, a 4 and 3 year old are obsessed.
Yeah. So. I love that like old princess dress. I know. I feel like there's so many things that we do with weddings or whatever it else it is. And we don't like ask why. We're just like, let's just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says you don't owe anyone a plus one, especially if they've never met the one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a weird expectation that you have to give people a plus one. And I think going back to the finances talk from the beginning, it's like, it's expensive to have a wedding and I'm paying for your plus one to be here. And I think depending on who's funding it, right? Like having that understanding, be able to understand, especially if they're your close friends, like I can't give everybody a plus one. And I think that should be okay. I think context matters. If you're inviting a coworker who knows no one and you give them no plus one, I actually think that's probably pretty uncomfortable for them. If you're inviting your cousin who has 20 other cousins at the wedding, they don't need a plus one.
Right. Yeah. Like your 16-year-old cousin that just started dating someone, I think they can come with their parents. Like that's fine.
Yeah.
I find this interesting thing when I post about either like if I do a skit about plus ones or kids being invited or something like that, people have this. They either are like, yes, I agree. You don't owe anyone an invite, right? The other side of people are like, just say you're broke. If you're poor, don't have a wedding. I've had some people say that and I'm like, just because they're not inviting the whole world and then some doesn't mean they don't have money or they're broke. Everything's nuanced, right? And it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah. It also reminds me of like when I talk about childcare, people say, well, don't have kids if you can't afford them. And it's like, okay, but I am having kids that I can afford. It doesn't mean that it's not expensive. People are having weddings that they can afford. It just means they can't invite your plus one. To me, it's very like classist to be like, just say you're broke. It's like everybody's having the wedding that they can afford. They can afford it that's within their budget. And if you don't like it, then don't attend, right? Then don't go. But I don't think we should judge anybody for the scale of their wedding or how many people they can invite or how expensive it is. Because at the end of the day, we're all living in this world and this economy together, right? We all have different means. I think it's a very strange take to have, honestly.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah, that's such a good point too about the kids comment because you hear that all the time. One, it's like if just because someone has a budget or they're like, oh, this is expensive or we can't afford to do this because blank, it doesn't mean they made a poor choice. And why are we why are we putting someone down because of their life? And I don't know, I found that so.
Yeah, it's also a very privileged take, right? Like we're all like one bad medical disaster or layoff away from struggling financially, like most people in this country. And so if you have that perspective, you can understand that some people maybe aren't prioritizing plus ones at their wedding because they're saving for a down payment on a house. And so they're not broke. They just have different priorities to you. And that's okay. But I do think it's a pretty privileged take to have that.
Yeah.
Just say you're broke side of it.
People are funny in the comments about honeymoon stuff, gifting at a wedding, all these kind of things that are just do what you can afford. If people are more happy to have you be there, it's like,
yeah,
very interesting. Okay. To kind of kick off a little bit more and before we get to the wedding story, this is rapid fire. This is kind of like just a new little wedding chaos rapid fire thing. Okay. Would you rather have your childhood nemesis in your bridal party or your partner's ex sitting front row?
Partner's ex.
Okay. Would you rather have the fire alarms go off during your vows or your mic cut out mid-speech?
Mic.
Yeah. I feel like that happens at like a lot of the weddings anyway.
I would say, and I've been at a wedding where the fire alarm went off. It wasn't during the vows, but we had to evacuate for a while.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I just heard a story where the fire alarm went off and they all had to go off into the parking lot. And they ended up just like the DJ just played music out there and they like opened up a bar outside. They're like, we couldn't go in for hours. And I was like, I love that. I love that turn of events where you just make the best of it.
It's memorable. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Everyone will always talk about that wedding. Would you rather have your cake be made of styrofoam for display or taste like cardboard?
Styrofoam.
Would you rather your hairstylist ghost you or your makeup artist show up 2 hours late?
Hairstylist ghost me.
Yeah. Would you rather accidentally post your private vows on Instagram or text them to your ex? These are wild.
Instagram. I've said worse on Instagram for sure.
It's like at this point, someone was asking how I post content. And I'm like, once you kind of start, you're kind of like, we're all on this floating rock together. Like,
who cares?
Once you, it's like, once you get it out there, you're like, I don't care. Things sting sometimes still, but for the most part, I'm just like, I don't know if you're ever like scrolling like TikTok, you feel like we're just all like on a talent show and we're all just kind of like posting different things. It kind of just rolls past you after a while. Okay, let's get into this week's wedding submission. As always, people just send me different stories to react to, give advice, or I guess it's kind of, I was gonna say unsolicited, but they sent it. So I guess it's solicited.
Yeah.
So yeah, feel free to stop me at any time or we can add little side stories. So let's see. I have not read it. So let's see how it goes. Okay. They say, so this is a long story. It started when my brother-in-law got married a few months before our wedding. My mother-in-law insisted on paying for the reception. The couple offered to chip in because they wanted to include the bride's grandparents. My mother-in-law said it was fine and that she would handle everything. On the day of the wedding, she was incredibly sweet, thanking everyone for coming. But as soon as the guests, including the couple, left and the bill came, she completely flipped out. Mind you, this was a low-key reception at a buffet-style restaurant. My husband tried to calm her down and even offered to cover the cost for the bride's grandparents, but she refused and said they were all ungrateful. She had also insisted on paying for the limo the bride took to the church. It was chaotic getting ready that day. There were three limos outside, and the drivers were directing us where to go. We even got into one limo and were told it was the wrong one, so we had to switch. At the time, I had a year and a half old daughter. She wasn't in the wedding, so my mother-in-law offered to watch her after the ceremony. Anyway, I'm in the limo with the bridesmaids and the flower girl. We arrive at the church, and there's my mother-in-law absolutely fuming. Apparently, the limo we rode in was meant for the bride. To be fair, the only difference was the color. She had my daughter on her hip and was walking up the steps. When I saw the bride pulling up in the other limo, she practically threw my daughter at me. I tripped trying to catch her so she wouldn't fall. My gosh. Okay. Then she walked over to the bride's limo, tried to hand her a cross necklace to wear. The bride politely thanked her, but explained she was wearing her late grandmother's necklace who passed just a few months before. That must have been the last straw. She reached into the window of the limo and tried to pull the bride out, screaming and cussing that she didn't deserve her son.
Oh,
thanks. Wow. Okay. That's wild. Then, like nothing had happened, she walked back to the steps and tried to take my daughter again. I told her absolutely not, that I was going to walk down the aisle with her. I had already cleared it with the groom, who was in the back of the church, sobbing. The bride's parents asked her to leave, but she said, "You'll have to call the cops. I'm not leaving without seeing my son get married." Imagine saying that and then demanding to be there for the wedding.
No, that's crazy. I mean, well, is that it or is there more?
There's more.
Okay.
It's already pretty wild. It's funny, these stories, sometimes they seem like out of left field. We don't really get like the before. Sometimes you get some of this stuff, but then all of a sudden it's just like this crazy day that just goes wild. Okay. Sure enough, the cops came and escorted her out.
Oh my,
that's wild. Okay. The rest of the wedding was actually beautiful and went off without a hitch.
That's good.
I guess that's good. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay.
I'm confused though. Did she pay for the reception and the rehearsal? It must have been the rehearsal dinner that she was talking about at the beginning.
Yeah.
I can't imagine she's paying for a reception she's not attending, but.
I know. Well, it said she insisted on paying for the reception, but.
Maybe that's the rehearsal dinner?
Maybe.
At the restaurant? I don't know.
Yeah. Because it sounds like the night before. So maybe
she said.
Oh, yeah. So I'm wondering if she meant rehearsal.
Maybe.
Yeah. Because, yeah, it was the night before at a restaurant, and then they got a check. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I can't imagine she'd offer to pay for it now, especially if everything.
No, sure. She was escorted away by the police, then she wasn't there for the check, right?
I mean, that is wild. Just because they took the wrong limo, I'm so confused of, like, there must be another backstory or something that happened.
I mean, it sounds like she doesn't like the daughter-in-law, and it also sounds like, I don't know, there's so many accounts out there that talk about these kind of mothers of son dynamics and mother-in-law dynamics. And I think this sounds like someone who, obviously we do not have the context here, but like wanted this wedding day to be about her and what she wanted. I also think the grandparent thing is so strange because like it's two people, you agree to it. And I think, yes, if somebody paid for my rehearsal dinner, I would say thank you and be grateful and all the things, but you shouldn't do it because you want to parade. Like if you're offering to do it and if you're agreeing to do it, I don't know what she wants from the bride and groom. They're obviously preoccupied with everything else, and that day's about them. And so even if they are thankful, it doesn't have to, like, I don't know. I don't know what that person wanted.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's that common trope of, like, they offer to pay for it, but there's this, like, invisible string, or, like, they're dangling a carrot to be like, we paid for this, so we get to do this. Or there's all these, like, if I do this, then I get this. And it's like, that's not how it works. If it's a gift, an actual gift, and you want to help, then treat it as a gift.
Yeah, there's no strings attached or control. Like, you don't get to control a situation because you financially provided for it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like they want this red carpet then rolled out. Like, oh, that's her. She paid for the event, you know? But it's like, it's still not going to be about you. It's about the bride and groom.
Yeah.
Okay. Now she says, now my wedding. After all of that, my husband and I decided we were going to elope to Vegas. We asked my parents. You're like, I get it.
Yeah, I get that. I eloped as well. I get it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, my family just doesn't get along. And so I figured instead of that, whatever is happening here, I don't think that would have happened to me, but I think I decided instead to elope with my husband in Italy. And we had the best time by ourselves. I mean, I get the eloping. I actually recommend it to everyone, even if your family is not complicated, because personally, to your point earlier, like, weddings are expensive. People are never going to be fully happy with everything that you do. If you are a person who knows that you're going to show up at your wedding and be more concerned with everybody else having a good time than having a good time yourself, don't have a wedding. And that's who I am. Like, I would be running around being like, are you having fun? Are you having fun? Are you having
fun? Being the host.
And I wouldn't be having any fun. And so eloping, I was able to do whatever I wanted, which was great.
That's such great advice, because I know brides were like, I was a bridesmaid for them. And the whole time they're more concerned about everyone else. They're doing everything for the other people. And it's like, yes, you want to care, obviously, and you want people to enjoy themselves, but it goes by so quickly. And if you're there stressed about everyone else and like, oh, did so-and-so like their food, or did so-and-so blah, 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 it loses the whole purpose, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, so she says they eloped to Vegas. We asked my parents to watch our daughter and began saving for plane tickets in a hotel. We had planned for a 2-month window. Wait, they were going for 2 months?
I'm assuming in 2 months from then.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
That was. As I'm reading these, I'm like, not absorbing.
I get it.
Right away. Okay. But as life often goes, something unexpected happened. I found out I was pregnant with our second child. No flying for me. So we decided to get married at the courthouse and plan to do a vow renewal in Vegas on our 1-year anniversary. We wanted to keep it simple and stress-free. So the mother-in-law from the previous story that's got to be her husband or partner's mom.
It's her husband's. Well, yeah. Right? Mom. Yeah.
Okay. So a mom of 2 sons, it sounds like, who...
At least 2. Yeah.
Yeah, at least 2. Yeah. Who might not like the daughter-in-laws. Okay. His mom insisted he stay at her house the night before, even though we had already been living together for 2 years. She also insisted I wear her cross necklace. So she's going through these same, like, motions, despite me not being religious. I had found a dress I loved on sale, just $260 for the dress, petticoat, and veil. I'm not into heels. I even wore flip-flops to the previous wedding. But she took me shoe shopping and made me get these blinged out heels instead of the white slipper style shoes I liked that were only $10. I don't understand made me get. She's like, pulls her up to the front and is like, you're wearing these on your wedding day. So I'd be like, no.
Yeah. I get it though. I think some people have a hard time, which I sometimes am, like a natural people pleaser. I'd have a hard time finding a way to like tactfully say no. But I think also, like, yeah, sometimes, especially with your own wedding, it's like, yeah, I'm not wearing those shoes. Thank you, though. That's so kind of you. It's kind of you, but I'm going to politely decline.
Yeah. I'm sure it's like so complicated seeing how she reacted to the last wedding. So she's like probably tiptoeing.
Totally.
To this mother-in-law. Gosh, that's got to be a nightmare. Okay. What was supposed to be a short 25-minute ceremony started to feel like a full-blown production. I was pregnant, emotional, and just wanted to marry my husband, eat a burger, and go home. My parents offered to take us to an Italian restaurant after the ceremony. I wasn't thrilled about it, but my husband really wanted to go, so I agreed. I figured I'd settle for ravioli instead of a burger. They invited his mom, my best friend, who was my witness, and his brother, who was his witness. The whole time at the restaurant, his mom was making nasty comments to his brother about his wife. Oh my gosh. So she still doesn't let this all go. No. I also wonder how, between that wedding and this one, how the relationship was. If they were like, you know, we're going to keep our distance, or if we're like, oh, it didn't happen to us, we're just going to brush it off. Because getting arrested and pulled out of your son's wedding is a big deal.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of missing pieces here.
Yeah. He eventually got up and left. Then she started in on my husband. saying he wasn't sticking up for her. It got super awkward. I finally said, "It's our wedding day. We just want to celebrate with the people we love." She looked me dead in the face and said, "Well, now I have no sons. Are you happy now?"
Yeah, I think she's just a classic example of the boy moms we see on social media. The ones who are a bit, are never going to be pleased with whoever the other, it's weird to say the other woman, but the wife is essentially. I think this is a lived experience that many women have, and it feels like a no-win scenario. I mean, obviously, we don't know the intricacies here. We don't know what's going on. From this story, It sounds like she feels like she's losing, quote unquote, losing her sons to their wives, which I think that's what's supposed to happen. Yeah. They're adults. So yeah, that's complicated for sure.
Yeah. I just had a therapist on a couple weeks ago, and there's a term for it. And I don't want to butcher it and like say the wrong thing. Enmeshment.
Yes.
And
yes,
she was like, It's when they like can't see their kids as separate people, even when they're into their adults, they feel like they always owe them or they always are connected in some interesting way that's not normal.
Yeah.
Not normal, but I guess it's not. Okay. I was shocked in complete disbelief. My husband calmly asked her to speak with her outside. As they were heading out, he told my best friend to grab my coat and purse. We got married in December and bring them to him. She followed and handed them to his mom. Later, he told me he told her behavior toward me, toward him, toward us was completely unacceptable, that she wasn't going to ruin another wedding day. He told her we needed a break. There we go. And that she had to accept that her sons had found women they love. She jumped in her car and sped off. We went 5 months with no contact after that. The root of it all, control. She constantly tries to compete with everyone, financially, emotionally, and otherwise. That was nearly 14 years ago. And to this day, we still have to take breaks from her. So not no contact, it sounds like, but
maybe low contact. I think some people go like low contact with their parents where they engage with them when it feels like they can and then otherwise take space from them. I mean, that's really hard. I think you hear about these stories a lot of times, and I just don't know that there's a healthy way to interact with a person who's going to engage. Even if I felt incredibly wronged by somebody on their wedding day, I would say nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No matter what. My sister, I don't care. I would say nothing. I'd be like, that's for my therapist for another day. That's not for now. I think people who don't have that capacity, obviously, that's a very different situation. And obviously, I imagine for her sons, like so hard to navigate.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be so hard coming in as like a daughter-in-law, really excited to marry this person and having your in-law like hate you just because you're with her son. No other reason. And you really can't win, I feel like, in a situation like that, unless the mom goes to therapy maybe or like do some soul searching or something. I don't know. That's just got to be really challenging. But
yeah, I can't imagine, honestly.
I'm proud of the husband because a lot of these stories, you don't hear them mention the fiance or partner or husband. A lot of times it's just like their personal story with the mother-in-law, or if it is a mother-in-law story or the situation. And we're always like, where are they in this story? So I'm really glad that he like put his foot down, was like, this is not okay, because you don't always hear that in these stories.
It sounds like both of them did. Both brothers stuck up for their partners. And I think that's really important. You hear that a lot, which is, I have these awful in-laws and my partner doesn't do anything about it. And I think that's a really difficult situation to be in. So yeah, I think it's great that both partners stepped in.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that was a wild, wild wedding story. Okay, it's funny that we were talking about eloping and stuff, because when I share these kinds of stories, people are always like, oh, that's it, I'm going to elope. And I think the important lesson here is know your audience and know what you and your partner want, ultimately, because I think eloping is a great idea. I don't think everyone should elope, but I think it just do whatever makes sense for you and block out all the noise, because it's so easy to think like, oh, my parents or my sister or whoever it is wants this big wedding for us. And then you do it and you're like, that's not what I wanted. And then it's disappointing.
Yeah, I think weddings have become this like big, I mean, they've always been a big thing, but I think now too, in the age of social media, it's like, what's the hashtag? What's this? What's that? It doesn't matter at the end of the day. And I think having a strong partnership is ultimately the thing that you're going to hold on to for the rest of your life. It's not going to be that wedding day. I will say, I have friends who've absolutely loved every single second of their wedding and loved having one and would do it 100 times more. And I think if you are that person and you think that's going to be you, you should absolutely do it. Like, do that. And if you're not, that's okay. And if it doesn't end up being the best day of your life, that's okay. And this is not meant to sound flippant, I guess, or I don't know if that's the right word, but as a wedding guest, I couldn't tell you what somebody's bouquet looked like 7 days later, let alone 7 years later. I don't remember, right? I'm here because I love you and I want to have a good time and I'm going to dance and I'm probably going to cry at your vows, but no one else is nearly as invested as you are. And I tell my friends all the time, like when I'm a bridesmaid, I'm like, don't worry about my pictures. You're never going to look at them again. You're really not. Like, you're never going to look at this picture of you and I in my bridesmaid's dress again. You're only going to look at pictures of you and your husband and maybe your family. And that's just the truth. At the end of the day, we're doing it for us and our partner. And there's so much that goes into it that we stress about. And it's like, no one else is going to remember this a week from now. Mm. You know, so don't kill yourself.
Yeah, no. I know. It's like you hear people getting stressed over, like, I mean, the favor being, oh my gosh, I was in a wedding once where they were stressed about the way the favor was on the plate. And I was like, no one's going to notice. Let's not stress about that. It's okay.
Yeah. And they never know. I didn't know what it was supposed to be. So I don't know that it's wrong. You know, like they're the only one who knows. And here's the thing. If a vendor has royally messed up and you're paying a lot of money for it, like you should care, but in the sense that you should try and get your money back, not in the sense that like anybody else cares.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would say it was kind of a blessing. Like my husband and I, all our like good friends got married before us. We were like one of the last ones. And it allowed us to see over the years, like what we liked, what we didn't like, and learn from brides too, being like, oh, I wasted money on this, or I really wish I would have done this, or I caved and did this when I really shouldn't, you know, whatever that was.
Yeah.
And I feel like we chopped off a bunch of people too that they wouldn't have cared to be there or not. And so I feel like we can learn a lot from observing, I guess.
100%.
Yeah. Okay. I like to just end these with some confessions. People send me their crazy confessions in Instagram. This one says, my fiance wants me to remember the good times with the in-laws, and I just don't think I can. So that sounds like a maybe bad relationship.
Maybe with the in-laws. Yeah. I mean, I think like you can't ask somebody to do something that they don't have the capacity to do. So it is what it is.
That sounds like to me, without assuming too much, it just sounds the son's probably put in the middle of the in-laws, his wife not getting along, and he doesn't want to like cause a barrier or say no. And so he's just think of the good times. That's hard. My sisters were so much drama at my wedding, then got mad when I didn't want to be at theirs. Oh,
that's hard.
Yeah, that's tough. Last one says, I have to invite someone I hate because she's the wife of my fiance's best friend.
Yeah, I think you do have to invite her, kind of.
Ooh.
I don't know. It's tricky. I would say if something has actually transpired between the two of you and she is a person who's caused you harm, you don't need to. And like your partner should be the one to have that conversation with his best friend. Yeah. If you just don't like her, you just don't vibe, you don't like her energy or who she is as a person, I think that's slightly different. If somebody's caused you direct harm and been unkind to you, you shouldn't have to have them at your wedding. If it's just that you just don't like them, you're not going to notice her. Again, going back to the, like, if you have 100 people at your wedding and you hate one of them for no real reason, and I'm not saying you do, but if that's what it is, and it's like, just don't pay attention to her. Just ignore her. You don't have to interact. There's enough people there as a buffer that it doesn't have to impact your day.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I want to say, I'll try to say it so it's not like too obvious, but I have to say something similar happened at our wedding. I wouldn't say hate. Of course, I don't hate anybody, but someone in our wedding that's like really close with my husband started dating someone I knew from my childhood that was just kind of like a bully, not like a nice person.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I found, I was like, oh, we have to give him a plus one. I know he's going to bring her. And it was just kind of uncomfortable, awkward, not a nice person. But I just like put my feelings aside with it. And it ended up being fine. Like fine, totally fine. She was awesome. And I feel like it was just me kind of holding on to some like childhood thing of like, okay, I don't know how this is going to go. And it was fine.
Yeah, that's good.
So I don't know. Not saying recommend to like all of a sudden let it go because we don't know what happened with these people. But just,
right. Totally.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like we kind of jumped all over the place because I'm like, oh, let's talk weddings and the mental load. But I feel like there's so many important conversations to have. And I was just telling someone, like, I started by just sharing wedding stories on here because that's what I do in my content. But I feel like it's so much more complicated than just wedding. There's relationships, there's new relationships, dynamics, that kind of thing. And it all ties into so much more. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Can you again just tell everybody where they can follow you, what kind of content you share, and anything interesting or fun you're working on?
Yeah, sure. I share content on modern marriage and motherhood and what that looks like in relation to gender equity. And you can follow me on pretty much every social media platform at She is a Page Turner. I also have a website, sheisapageturner.com, a Substack, all the things. And so if you Google it, you'll find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It was awesome chatting with you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Here Comes the Drama. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate, review, and share it with a friend who loves a good story. And make sure you're following me on all socials at Party Planning by Krista for even more stories, skits, and a little extra drama. Until next time, protect your peace, and I'll see you soon. Bye now.